6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound.
And welcome to this Monday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host, John Quinlan. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about an issue that has extreme urgency right now. It's the issue of immigration equality for LGBT people. And as many of you are probably aware, there's potential for some sweeping immigration reform that could be going through Congress. But one of the things that's uncertain right now is whether that will include same-sex couples who are binational that where in the cases we'll be discussing today, where one member of the couple is an American citizen and one a citizen of another country. But under existing law, it's sometimes very problematic for those couples to be able to live together. This makes things very complicated, especially in situations where there are children involved. Many reasons why, although we live in a time where marriage equality is coming to the forefront and where major strides are being made in terms of public opinion, very often, in the case of the law, we're still lagging behind, especially when it comes to the federal laws that provide over 1,000 protections for married couples. Again, this is another realm in which that's the case, federal laws that determine immigration policies. Very pleased to have in studio two friends who have visited here before in the virtual sense via Skype. Gabby Helford is here, along with Joey Johansson. Hey, welcome to A Public Affair.
Hey, great. Thank you.
And Gabby and Joey are visiting us. We're so lucky to get a few hours here on a several-day trip through Madison. They're living currently in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. We'll go further into details of their life story, but essentially Gabi is someone who is from the Frankfurt area of Germany originally. Joey was born and raised in Iowa, but lesbian community leader here in Madison for many years. Matter of fact, she's been touring her old haunts in terms of being a producer for Query today. And but their situation is one of these situations where because of ambiguities in the immigration law, their options in terms of where they might live are limited, and they've chosen to live in Europe, where the European Union has policies that allow them a great deal of freedom of choice and movement. Also joining us in studio is Frank Meunier. Frank is he and his partner John Strasser have been in the Madison area for about 10 years now. Many of you will recognize John's name, someone who accomplished something many thought was not possible in defeating a 28-year incumbent, Tim Brewer, down on the south side. He's one of our new members of the City of Madison Aldermanic delegation. Frank's situation is that because of request by his employer, he has a certain status, but once again, not a status equivalent to that of an opposite sex couple. And we'll be hearing a little bit more about kind of the implications of all of that for Frank and John. John, unfortunately, was unable to be here, but he's got a pretty good excuse, I guess, as a speech he's making, I think, before the Urban League today. But Frank, it's so good to have you here. Welcome to A Public Affair. And lastly, rounding out our panel, we're very pleased to have on the phone from out in New York City, Rachel Tiven. She's the executive director of an organization called Immigration Equality, a group that has really taken a leadership role in advancing these rights. Rachel is a much accomplished attorney herself, worked on these issues for many years. Rachel, welcome to A Public Affair.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So good to have you here. Rachel, if we could, if you could just help us establish the lay of the land, we'll have a chance in a moment to go around the table and hear from our panelists about some of the more personal implications of all of this. But just to kind of establish for people what the status quo is, could you juxtapose the rights right now of an opposite sex couple, a heterosexual couple who are married versus let's keep it simple, because this is the case of the folks in the studio. Same-sex couples who, though they were married in Iowa, in the case of all of these folks, don't necessarily have the same rights under U.S. immigration laws.
Well, unfortunately, the juxtaposition is really night and day. For couples whose marriages are recognized by the federal government, as well as by the state in which they were married, they can apply And they can prove that their relationship is a bona fide relationship, that they're really committed to one another, that they can have the opportunity to show the kinds of documentation that a couple seeking immigration benefits like a green card gets to show, right? It's the chance to show the government that you've got a marriage license, that you share a home, that you have family photos together, that you can show any number of things like being named as the beneficiary of a life insurance policy, or as the decision maker in a healthcare proxy, all the kinds of things that that families like these that are so committed to one another and have struggled to stay together against really significant government intrusion in their lives have the opportunity to show. Lesbian, gay, and some transgender couples don't have the opportunity to even show the government how committed they are to one another. Their applications are denied as soon as they are filed, and Immigration Equality has worked with thousands and thousands of couples, and especially over the past 2 years, since the Obama administration stopped defending the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, we've worked with quite a few couples that have applied for green cards, hoping at least that the government would hold those green cards aside until the Supreme Court rules on the constitutionality of DOMA. But in fact, even from an administration that says the law that bars these families from recognition is unconstitutional on its face, so unconstitutional that they can't even defend it any longer, that same administration denies an application from a legitimately married couple without even looking at the underlying merits of that application, just because the couple is gay or lesbian.
And I think there's a special irony in here in that in the realm of international law and the realm of the United Nations and everything else, I think there'd been a long time silence. Let's take the UN as a case in point. And just by way of disclosure, I'm the state president of our local UN association. I sit on their national board, so I've been following this fairly closely. The last few years, it's really surprised me to have things like Hillary Clinton come out in Geneva a year and a half ago and speak very, very personally, compassionately, and on target to say there are LGBT couples in every part of the world, and to address that very explicitly in the context of the UN Human Rights Commission, taking up basic issues, at least in terms of issues of torture, asylum, other basic survival issues. For the first time, and having parts of the world like Latin America that you'd never expect to come on board fully. I mean, this is really a time of sea change in a lot of ways where international rights are being discussed and recognized, and yet it's ironic that the administration wouldn't do what you were describing just now, come on board and until DOMA's taken care of,
well,
be able to wait.
Ultimately, I mean, I think we were disappointed that the administration didn't go further, but they have done a few other things, and as you mentioned, the Department of State has done a few things in addition to the great statements that Secretary Clinton made to at least lessen the burden ever so slightly on LGBT binational families. But really, the change has to come from Congress and from the Supreme Court. Congress needs to reform our immigration system in a way that helps all families, including LGBT families, and the Supreme Court needs to resolve the question of whether DOMA is or is not constitutional, and given that there is barely a federal court that has found that it even passes muster at the most basic level, certainly we are optimistic that the Supreme Court will agree. But I think that what you raised is so important, in that it really is it's an embarrassment for the U.S. to be so far behind our peer countries, both on the question of LGBT recognition and family recognition, but also on the question of labor mobility and immigration rights. We are losing talented people who want to build their careers in the U.S., because our immigration policies don't allow them to come and don't allow them, if they, you know, if allowed to come, don't make it easy for an LGBT person to bring their family. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've seen so much support through our business coalition from both big business and small business, that you know, really saying that this is an issue of concern to business, and they want to see Congress change the law.
All right. One other thing before we go and introduce our panel that we wanted to make sure we emphasize at the outset, as you're mentioning, two realms in which change is imminent, we hope, but one is actually coming up in the Congress fairly soon. This is in the realm of immigration reform, and Senator Leahy recently introduced some amendments that would make sure that LGBT people are included if these amendments were to be approved. Could you describe a little bit what's happening there and what our listeners might do if they're wanting to speak out in support of those initiatives?
Sure, sure. It was really you know, tremendous leadership by Senator Leahy. He's really been a leader on the question of equal immigration rights for LGBT families for a decade, and he introduced. He filed last week, which is a necessary procedural step to offering an amendment in the Judiciary Committee. He filed two different versions of legislation that would recognize LGBT families for immigration purposes. And you know, really the most important thing for listeners to do is to call your members of Congress, to call your senators and say that this is important to you. Wisconsin senators are not on the Senate Judiciary Committee, but still it's enormously important that your senators hear that this is something that you consider to be a key part of a good immigration reform package, that the support of the LGBT community is important to pushing immigration reform to the president's desk and to getting the best bill possible, and that means including LGBT families in the bill. It's important, you know, even for a senator like Senator Baldwin to hear that this is a priority. We should not take her support for granted. She has championed this bill. She's been a longtime co-sponsor when she was in the House, but it's important for her to hear from her constituents that people want to see this in the immigration bill and that the LGBT community wants to be included in a good bill that we can push forward to the president's desk.
You may be familiar with our situation here, but of course, Tammy Baldwin's successor, Mark Pocan, is an openly gay congressman, and I think, as best I can tell, we're the only congressional district that has that distinction in terms of both folks representing us. But to punctuate what you're saying, too, I know that for both of them, though they certainly personally and in every realm, you know, see the significance of this, having those numbers there, being able to share with their colleagues that large numbers of their constituents have called. And of course, our district is a diverse one, both urban and rural, folks from all parts of the political spectrum. It's still important for folks to reach out. We also have Senator Ron Johnson on the opposite end of the political spectrum. It may be unlikely that he'll support these things, but it's still important for him to hear from folks. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. You don't get if you don't ask.
And, that's right.
And, you know, and it really, I think that this is, we have seen that this is a bipartisan issue. There is co-sponsorship in the Senate. Senator Collins from Maine introduced the bill, the standalone version of the bill, with Senator Leahy this Congress, and two Republicans in the House of Representatives were original co-sponsors of the bill in the House. It's the first time that we've had bipartisan reintroduction of the legislation, and it really speaks to the fact that families being separated is just un-American. It doesn't matter what party you're from.
All right. 608-256-2001 is the number if you'd like to join in our conversation. Again, we'll be speaking throughout the hour about the issue of immigration equality. Our guest on the line from New York is Rachel Tibben. She's the Executive Director of Immigration Equality. Also in studio, we have Frank Manure, representing himself and his partner, John Strasser, and also Gabby Helford and Joey Johansson. Again, in both cases, couples in which one member is is an American citizen, another someone from another country, again, under current law, their relationship's not recognized in terms of immigration status. And I guess before we go further in conversation with Rachel, and by the way, I just want to invite all three of you, if you have specific questions or other things you want to interject, please keep this conversational. But Frank, why don't we start with you and maybe the story of you and John. You've been in Madison for about 10 years. Rachel was talking about one of the things that we're really losing potentially in terms of just our own self-interest as a country is potentially, as happens with other couples, that one of the couples who may not be an American citizen prior to the marriage becomes someone contributing in terms of realms of business and other things. Now, in your case, your status here is partly because your business invited you here. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And could you just back up and maybe just tell us a little story, how long you and John have known each other? And I know there's a marriage story connected with all this as well. Is that right?
Yes, there is. Actually, we met 20 years ago. It will be 20 years in 2 weeks.
Wow, congratulations.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. And after spending a year and a half in Europe where John was coming back and forth to visit me, very expensive dating game, I guess. John decided to find me a job here and decided to come. Stayed in this first job, like sponsored by my first employer for a year and a half, and then lost the job. And then it became, what do we do? Do we stay? Do I go back? You're still 3.5 years along the relationship, so you're still like, well, what do I want to do? We decided that worst case scenario, we would move to France, although at this point there was no recognition either for LGBT marriage or anything. I was lucky enough that I worked for a French company that sent me back here on a regular basis, so we could keep our primary residence here, and I was just going back and forth for the company in France and representing this company here in the U.S. Long story short, few jobs down the road, I found another company that accepted to sponsor me as a foreign worker here. And then it's been the normal immigration process through work permits, and applying for the green card.
Yeah.
And right now we're waiting for the green card to be processed with this very long waiting list and delays, and hoping nothing changes so that this green card can be accepted so that we can continue the life here.
This is probably self-evident, but if you think back to that time when your status was more ambiguous, when you're trying to make these difficult choices of where to live, or just when you were trying to maintain a long-distance relationship, there's stresses that go with that, are there not?
Yes, especially when I was working for a French company, because every time I was coming back here on a business trip, there's always the risk that the immigration officer may say, yeah, no, you're not coming in, or you've been here so often, like something is fishy. And obviously I was, for lack of a better term, milking the stays as long as possible so I could stay. Like, we were living downtown Chicago, and that was my primary residence.
Yeah.
Although you always have to remember that on paperwork, that when you do for filing or entering the country, not your primary residence, was back in France. So you always have like this little sweat going down your neck every time you were coming through. Today this is not the case, because obviously I'm legally in this country, like, not that I was not legal before, but now I've got a work permit that allows me to enter, and there's no issue at the immigration. But we are so close to being done with a green card, and any work change affects the filing. For example, something as simple as even being promoted today is on standby because I cannot have a change of title. Because we would have to reapply, and I've exhausted all my work permit allowance. So more or less, we're taking a risk if a company decides to change one comma in my title. So I've got a very understanding company. They understand I'm fine in my job. And we go for it, and we're going to wait for whatever the few months left for the process.
And it goes without saying that the arguments that you're making, the dialogue you're having with immigration is very different than were you to be an opposite-sex couple where the immigration law would recognize. You're not making what Rachel was alluding to earlier, bringing out the family photos, trying to establish the legitimacy of your relationship so much as your work status.
It's the work status, which has been a longer process than if you had been a green card through a marriage license, where more or less the time frame is really shorter based on what we have. Here it was pretty lengthy, but even a year and a half ago when we decided to get married and cross the border to Iowa, I decided to finally make it official, at least for us. Nobody has asked us anything, and actually this little piece of paper is in the safe and hasn't really changed anything legally or for the administration or the way I file my taxes or any of the rights that I have here.
You mentioned this earlier, but things are also about to change in France, it sounds like.
Yes. Actually, I have had the pleasure of being on a business trip to France last month when the law got passed. So it hasn't been really entered into effect yet, but it was actually a big moment because at least now I want, not that I really want to admit it, and if John listens, please don't listen to what I'm going to say right now, but at least we have a plan B. If something goes wrong here, it's not just us moving back to France and recreating the same situation there. It's actually, hey, now we are legally married in the eyes of French law. Our marriage license can be recognized as soon as they do the normal paperwork, so I can go to the French consulate in Chicago, get it processed done, and we could move back if we wanted to.
All right. Frank, we'll come back to your story and some of the other implications in just a minute. Rachel Tibbett, I just want to give you a chance to comment on what Frank was telling us. This is more than just a slight inconvenience or a difference in justifying his ability to stay here based on work stuff. But for a lot of couples, this is a really severe hardship, is it not?
Absolutely, and I think that, Frank is right to say that, that they are among the lucky ones, but still, an enormously long and difficult effort that most people don't have access to at all, and, there isn't any way to dress up the fact that this is simple discrimination against couples who are gay. Simply because of their sexual orientation. And I want to throw in a historical note that I think is really important here. This isn't only a consequence of the Defense of Marriage Act. There is a historical root to the discrimination against LGBT immigrants that goes all the way back to the 1950s. And from the 1950s forward, Congress barred sexual deviance, and prior to that the language was psychopathic personalities, from entering the United States as immigrants. You couldn't become a U.S. citizen if the Immigration Service found that you were a psychopathic personality, which was the language that they used to refer to gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people. And this is an issue that was challenged in court several times and ultimately resolved by the Supreme Court in 1967 against LGBT people, when the Supreme Court said in 1967 that Congress absolutely had the right to bar sexual deviance from entering the U.S. or becoming citizens. And this was in place until 1990. Until 1990, you could be dismissed from the U.S., deported because you were gay. And what's happened since 1990 is that LGBT individuals can enter the U.S., but LGBT couples cannot. You can come alone, but you can't bring your family with you, and you can't fall in love with an American while you're here and expect to be able to stay and make a family with that person here. That American is powerless to keep you here. And if you're lucky enough to find work that will sponsor you, then you are among the lucky ones. But it's even that is insufficient and unfair. And it really the exclusion of LGBT people isn't over until LGBT families are really free to live in the United States as families and not be discriminated against.
And to add one other extra dimension, if the couple has children, there's the potential that they'll lose regular access to one of their parents.
I mean, absolutely. A law that that doesn't see families as families, and that makes it makes one parent or both parents vulnerable, risks splitting up the family, or in the case of families living in exile, makes it extremely difficult, if not impossible, for the children to come here and be recognized as the children of a U.S. citizen. In some cases, that all of those things are really terrible consequences that are consequences that so many immigrant families of all different situations are facing under our broken immigration system. Mm-hmm. And what LGBT families face is an extra additional layer of discrimination because they are LGBT.
All right. For those of you who are just joining us mid-show, again, this is A Public Affair here on WORT Community Radio. I'm your host, John Quinlan. We'll be discussing through the remainder of the hour the issue of immigration equality for LGBT individuals and families, as you're saying, special implications for couples and for families with children. Now some potential legislation happening in the wake of immigration reform that we hope you will all weigh in on. 608-256-2001 is the number if you'd like to call. We apologize as we were trying to set the stage here. I think we had at least one caller we may have lost along the way. Encourage you to call back and join in our conversation. We have on the phone Rachel Tiven, who's the Executive Director of Immigration Equality, immigrationequality.org, a place that you can find out more about their important work. Frank Manure is here on behalf of himself and his partner, John Strasser. And I'm so sorry for having folks who have made the trouble of traveling one quarter way around the world. We're finally now having a chance to get to Gabby Helfert and to Joey Johansson, who have been kind enough to join us. As mentioned before, Joey is someone who is a longtime friend of this station, having worked on our program Query for many years, a longtime Madison resident before that, grew up and was born in Iowa, and that's the state also where she was married to Gabby. Gabby, I'll let you maybe tell the story of how the two of you met and how you've been together and kind of where the path has taken you since then.
Sure. Thanks, John. We met here in Madison, actually, when I was visiting for the wedding of a mutual friend of ours, and that friend had a lot of out-of-town guests, so she asked whether I would be okay to be set up with a friend of hers, and that friend was Joey, so I was staying at her house for that wedding weekend, and we just hit it off right away. And so she came over a couple weeks later because she had a work assignment in France, actually, and decided then to fly in via Amsterdam and stay a weekend with me. And then she decided, when she was in France, to shorten that work assignment slightly to spend more way with me on the way back to America again. So she stayed for another couple of weeks, and then I flew over for Christmas over 3 weeks. And basically, we knew, like Frank said as well, you can't really keep a relationship up over a distance of a 17-hour one-way trip. That's basically impossible. It's every time it's 800 to 1,000 euros or dollars, whatever you want, an airline ticket. So it's just really difficult. So when we were over in Iowa one winter night, it was snowing, and we were driving back to Madison at night in a snowstorm, and then I just said, okay, do you want to marry me? And she said, are you kidding me? So, that's how it all happened. She finally believed me that I was that I was serious about it. Yeah, and then became the hard part of figuring out how to live together. We knew that marriage would be a prerequisite to live together, so we got that boxed in April. But the problem was then we were looking into options to live here together in Madison. We were talking to lawyers and looking into employment situations as well, because we initially had planned to go the same route as Frank described, to find an employer who would sponsor me to come here. And we thought it wouldn't be too difficult, because I mean I do have a lot of work experience. I do have a PhD in management and all these things, so we thought it should be possible somehow. But yeah, the economy was kind of against us at that point in time. And then also I found it really interesting to hear from Frank about their experiences, because it is really like that. You get this green card, or yeah, this temporary work permit for like 3 years, and then you have to reapply, and you always have to live in this insecurity. Am I really gonna be here next year again, or next month again? Yeah, and like what he described with, I can't get a promotion because of this, because otherwise my application would become invalid, and all these things, and that it just seemed so risky to do all that. And on the other hand, we had the situation that Joey had a house here, and she had cats, and she had a job at UW, and her parents are in Iowa. My parents are dead, so that was not it wouldn't have been an issue for me to move here. I had only been in Rotterdam for 3 years at that time, so I was pretty much flexible to come here. Yeah, but. The law was kind of against us, and so yeah, we decided for her to come over and learn Dutch and ship her cats over, and she lost her house in the process because she didn't find a buyer, so that was gone as well, and we lost a lot of money. It was a lot of hassle, but luckily everything really turned out well for us, and she found a job at the same university where I work, and is picking up on the language. And so, yeah, things are moving good for us.
I think folks extracted all of this during the conversation, but I should have set it up a little bit. And you're originally from Germany.
I'm originally from Germany,
the Rhine Valley area near Frankfurt. Yeah. And but again, as you pointed out, the European Union has options for same-sex couples in terms of ability
Absolutely.
To live throughout the European Union. You all picked Rotterdam as your...
Well, I was already in
You're
Rotterdam.
Already there. Okay.
I already had my job in Rotterdam at the university, and we just said, okay, we're going to stay here. The Netherlands is a very liberal country, and it was the first country in the world to introduce marriage equality back in 2001, I think it was.
Yeah.
So it's more than 12 years now, and it was not a real issue for her to get a residence and a work permit, because we just had to produce our documents and say, okay, look, we're married. This is her passport. This is my employer's statement that I earn enough money to take care of her. And that was basically it. So it was a very straightforward and very cheap process, too. It was just a very small administration fee, and she got her stamp in her passport and her work permit. So that was good.
All right. Joey, I'll come back to you in just a second and get you to maybe count on the irony that it was so easy there versus what the situation is here. But before we do that, we do have a caller on the line. Call your comment or question, please.
Thank you. Thanks for you guys putting this together. It's very, very interesting, learning quite a bit more. And thanks for both couples also, and hopefully all of our struggles will be done here soon. But in the context of... asking a more legal question, if we can maybe use the aid of Rachel to weigh in on this, and it's the current situation. Obviously, I would tend to think that there are many people like that going through sort of the same situation. But having been, in a relationship here with an American citizen for so many years, for about 10 years, been married for 1 year in the state of Washington, D.C., and... My current visa also, it's been, let's say, I've overstayed my welcome a while back. What sorts of issues do you think people in this particular situation where you are in a relationship with, you know, with a U.S. citizen, someone who was born and raised here. However, you know, obviously their partner has overstayed their welcome. Is the, you know, fallout of DOMA, if that does, you know, end up, you know, ruling our favor, what are we really expecting, you know, from that? Is that what we would need to kind of help us, or are there other consequences for people whose, you know, current visas may have already expired?
And Rachel, let me give you this opportunity to just kind of expand on sort of the scope of services that you all provide there at Immigration Equality.
Sure. Well, it's a good question, and everyone should visit Immigration Equality's website. It's immigrationequality.org, where we have really extensive legal information, frequently asked questions that cover a lot of the situation. I mean, essentially, you know, all the situations that people have described so far, with a lot of, you know, a lot of information about what the options are currently, and you know, and also some, you know, some ways to prepare for what may happen in the future. You know, we are optimistic that a good ruling from the Supreme Court that strikes down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act. Section 3 is the part that bars the federal government from recognizing marriages performed by states. That will have a, you know, a positive impact on couples seeking green cards. We have pretty good reason to believe that it will only apply to couples who are married. So couples with civil unions or domestic partnerships or other forms of relationship recognition, even if the place where you entered into that civil union or domestic partnership sees it as equivalent to marriage, we believe, although we certainly won't know for sure until the law changes, but we believe that what the relevant agencies will recognize is really only sort of capital M marriage. And for people who, you know, the questions about whether or not to marry have always been complicated by, you know, sort of, I mean, as you know, as my fellow panelists described, some of the complications of coming in and out on different visas, that the irony of needing to maintain that the U.S. is not your home, not your permanent residence, even if in your heart it is, because irony of ironies, that would be used against you and used to separate you from your partner. And so for a long time, there's been, you know, a complicated set of factors for couples to weigh in determining whether or not to marry. However, for a couple where the foreign national has overstayed their visa and has fallen out of status, some of that downside has disappeared, because if you're not going to leave the country and reenter, there isn't the same danger in being asked upon reentry whether or not you're married. And in fact, some of the changes, I mentioned earlier that there have been a few positive changes from the administration over the past couple of years, and one of those is that the administration promised us, and it took us 14 months to get them to promise in writing what they had promised initially almost 2 years ago, which is that a couple that in which the foreign national is facing deportation, if that couple has family ties, including family ties to a same-sex partner, that those family ties will be recognized to potentially provide relief from deportation in the form of what the government calls prosecutorial discretion. It's a, you know, a benefit that that the administration has said they will make available to people who can show that they, you know, that they have lots of positive factors in their immigration case. And we pushed them very, very hard to include LGBT family ties in their list of positive factors. So this is all a long way of saying that you know, irony of ironies, although you still don't have any benefit from the government, any affirmative benefit that would allow you to get a green card and to get an affirmative status here, the government does recognize gay and lesbian couples for some relief from deportation, so that someone who's out of status and who gets picked up, that would be a positive factor.
All right, just to punctuate once again, your role there at Immigration Equality, of course, is to try to affect some of these legislative changes, to advocate within the current administration, but you're also advocates in terms of taking on essentially a casework function, in terms of folks can come to your website, fill out a form, and they'll be contacted, and someone will work with them in terms of the specific obstacles that they face. Is that right?
Correct. We provide legal information and advice and referrals for families that need information. So in addition to the really extensive information that's available on our website, you can contact us for an intake, and we'll help you figure out how your family can evaluate your options. In most cases, we refer you to an attorney who can help you apply for any benefits for which you might be available. We take on a small number of cases directly for a handful of binational couples who can help us really push the administration on some of these test case issues, for example, the prosecutorial discretion policy that I described. We also represent people who are seeking asylum in the U.S. because they're fleeing persecution from countries around the world on the basis of their sexual orientation or their gender identity.
Yeah. Thank you. I want to. We have a caller on line. Caller, if you could just wait for just a second, I just want to make sure to bring Joey into our conversation. But Joey, what I wanted to ask you about, we all went out with friends on Friday, and of course, I think we couldn't help but talk about some of these implications. We had the good fortune of having the two of you be friends across the ocean through Facebook and other ways to keep in touch. And I know you all were following the uprising at the Capitol, all the other political developments that are happening here. But as a woman who's very politically involved and invested in making democracy work back in this country, it must be perplexing to have this double set of rules, where in the European Union you're recognized and your relationship is honored, and yet here that's just not the case right now.
Yes, it's very true. I have an Iowa wedding certificate that gives me all full rights in Eastern Europe and Western Europe. And when I travel around anywhere outside the United States, I still have to carry my passport and my work permit. When Frank was talking about the sweat running down your neck, there's still a small degree of it that I walk with every day. But it's still much more relaxing a month after month that goes by. But the perplexing thing, and maybe I can put it in the context of even going to airports, and I would like to thank whoever changed the ruling at the airports. Coming out of Amsterdam this past week was the first time we didn't have to go 2 hours in advance, and we didn't have to spend 45 minutes in a long line waiting to be interrogated by Homeland Security TSA officers, asking us who we were going to see, what was the situation of our travel. Still, however, when I fill out a form to come into the U.S., I have to state that I'm traveling by myself, because the federal form asks if you're traveling with family. And since the federal government doesn't recognize Gabi as my family member, I'm still traveling on my own. And when we come into the airport setting, I go to the U.S. citizen line, and Gabi goes to the other line, and then we have to wait another hour to come back together again at the end. So there's small nuances that you experience day to day that makes it different than the average person coming, traveling to and from the U.S. And in the situation of our marriage certificate giving us full rights in Europe, that's pretty amazing. And I'm really thankful that the Netherlands has had the future vision to be able to give rights to its citizens.
But I mentioned it's been a real roller coaster ride. You must have taken special pride when your home state of Iowa decided to do the right thing, with marriage decision, and yet it doesn't necessarily go every place that you need it to go.
Yeah, if you had told me years ago as a farm girl in Iowa that I would have had any of these experiences, I would have said you're crazy. But now as it unfolds, and Rachel clearly pointed out that the burden is on the shoulders of the LGBT individuals to open up education, to show how our governments have set up this distinction of people. So as we do that, we continue to show where the legislators make it the circus. It's not us. It's the legislators that decide to put up these distinctions and how we really do need to work with them.
Gabi was just mentioning, Rachel, that Gabi and Joey's story is one of many that are told on your website just as a means of trying to give a human face to this. So once again, we want to refer back to immigrationequality.org is a great resource to find out more. We do have another caller on the line. 608-256-2001 is the number if you'd like to join in our conversation. Caller, your comment or question, please.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I missed about 10 minutes here, so this may have already been discussed, but... the question that immediately came to my mind is, having seen Mike Morsicco and healthcare in France, how does our healthcare system impact all this? If we, you know, if we'd gone to single payer, would this be a across the board? Is this just going to open up another three cans of worms with our healthcare system?
Gabi, you're shaking your head. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I don't know exactly about the healthcare system here, but I mean, for us, we've always been thinking about what would happen if DOMA would actually drop, you know, if we could have free access here in America. And right now our situation is in the Netherlands that we have basically unlimited access to health insurance for like $100 a month. Because everybody has to buy health insurance and everybody buys them for the same.
You would say that one more time, for $100 a month.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether you're employed or not. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't really know about the situation here in the U.S. I understand that you really have to pay a lot of money to get health insurance unless you are employed and have some kind of social benefits here. And, of course, this is also a consideration we have. I mean, not that we are, like, a huge burden on our health insurance system in the Netherlands. We barely need the doctor ever, but it's just good to have it, you know? So if we were to come here and maybe I wouldn't, or maybe now the two of us wouldn't right away find a job, we would have to spend a considerable amount of money just to get health insurance, or we would not have health insurance, and that is actually a problem. But I would not think that LGBT people are in general less healthy than the rest of the population, so it should not be a burden on the health insurance system in America.
It just strikes me, it's just part of this larger thread. Again, we view ourselves in this country as so exceptional, but there are lots of places in the world that are way ahead of us in a lot of important realms, including this one.
Yes, yeah. and if I could sound off here too, I've clearly seen the distinction of a two-party system compared to where we are in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. The last election cycle, I got the ballot and I saw that there were 18 parties that were listed and were viable options to be voted into Parliament, and 12 are represented. 12 are represented in Parliament. So you start seeing the distinction, and you listen into the conversations of legislators. They're not nitpicking these issues and trying to draw distinctions of people. What they're trying to do is, I see anyway, looking at larger, more important issues of the world. And as I talk to my Dutch colleagues, it's always a question mark is, what do Americans really think about? And when it comes up to health issues, you know, don't people in America want to take care of their own basic health?
Yeah.
Why isn't everyone working for the good of the all? So that's the conversation that we generally end up in, is what are Americans thinking about?
And we do have another caller on the line. Caller, your comment or question for our panel, please.
Yeah, this is a really terminological. I've been following recently where a local senator introduced his mate or spouse, and he used the term husband. Are the terms husband and wife useless, or should one just use the word spouse? What is the terminology these days? Thank you.
Well, when we got married in Iowa, they actually had a form which we had to fill in to apply for marriage, and you could choose whether you wanted to be named spouse or wife of each other in our case. Yeah. So, in principle, they leave it open, but I guess it's probably very different from state to state, because states can basically choose what they how they want it to be seen. We chose for spouse, although when we go out together, I usually introduce Joey as my wife.
Interesting. Frank, you're the choice that you and John make? Is John your husband?
John is my husband.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think you'll see the term, too, when you're listening to the Supreme Court case. I believe Edie Winslow is referring to her former partner as partner.
Yeah.
So I believe it's very individual.
Rachel Timmon, I want to come back to a point that you had made earlier, that even if DOMA does come down and we make some headway, it may be that at least in the short term, a lot of the significance of this will be for people that have their marriages legally recognized in a state like Iowa. Now, we hope with Minnesota coming up this week, maybe is potentially the 12th such state, or having been married in a foreign country that recognizes same-sex marriage. Is there ambiguity at all, though, about whether, for example, our Congressman Mark Pocan, he and his partner, I think we're married in Toronto, and yet neither is a resident of Canada. Are there still some ambiguities about whether all of those relationships will be recognized? And, of course, a lot of work we still have to do to recognize folks who don't have an option necessarily of being married in their home state.
For couples who are validly married, there should not be any question that marriage is valid for immigration purposes. The immigration system looks at whether your marriage was valid where you got married, what immigration lawyers refer to as the place of celebration, and then they ask a second question, which is the marriage bona fide? Those are the questions they ask. Those should be the questions they ask of every married couple whose application they're evaluating, and we are optimistically looking to see the guidance from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and as well as from the State Department, that those are the questions that they will be asking for all married couples as soon as they are free to do so.
I apologize. I just need to interject because we're down to our last 2 minutes. But for a couple, for example, from Wisconsin, neither couple maybe has a tie to a state or a country that has things recognized. Can we travel to another state and still have that be a legally recognized marriage?
Absolutely should be able to, but okay. We won't know until we have the ruling and until we have the implementation from the administrative agencies.
All right. Gabi, you had a point.
Yeah, just one final remark from me. I think that's a very good point you're making, Rachel. And what we want is not any special treatment. We just want to be treated equally, and that is exactly the thing, you know? That is what this is all about.
Let me just go around the table. Frank, any final thoughts?
I think like the whole conversation that we had over the years, like talking to our representative, it was always like kind of leaving us in the background, kind of a fear to say we are with somebody and we've been with somebody for so many years, or we are getting married. And a little bit like I was thinking about this when you asked the question, is John my partner or my husband? And after like 18 years, he was my partner, and even after we got married, I was calling him my partner, until I decided that it was time to make a stand, and we are married, and I was not going to be ashamed of it. And if he was going to help the system to progress when I was going to go through some administrative process or meeting people in the street, I was going to call him my husband, because after all, that's what he is. I've got a paper to prove it.
Absolutely. Joey, we've got about 30 seconds of
your
fun.
Yeah, well, it's, for me, it's all about love, and we're speaking out for common sense and decency. That's if we continue to do that in our personal lives and our group lives, then we can move forward, yes.
Rachel Timmon, to give you the last word, are you optimistic given current trends? We're obviously feeling them in the realm of DOMA and marriage. In the international realm, is there reason for hope?
I am absolutely optimistic, because the people who need this change will not rest until we get it. And if everybody who cares about this continues to call your members of Congress and to tell everybody you know that we need immigration reform for everybody, including LGBT families, we absolutely will win.
This is John Quinlan for Public Affair. I want to thank my guests, Frank Wernier, Gabby Helford, Joey Johansson, on the phone from New York, Rachel Tibben, the Executive Director, Immigration Equality, Immigration...